Parry's I Was Glad. Of course, one of the iconic anthems that talk about Jerusalem, the holy city, as an analogy for heaven. And our guest right now is Father Chris Bedding, the rector of Darlington in the Diocese of Perth, sometimes stand-up comedian, but who's on sabbatical in Jerusalem. Father Chris Bedding, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Noel. It's great to be with you.
Now, you're in a place called Tantur Ecumenical Institute. I've been looking it up on the web, and this is a really interesting place founded by, I think, the Pope and the Ecumenical Patriarch of Constantinople, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, it actually had its genesis at the Second Vatican Council in the early 60s, and then with the Six-Day War in 1967, it delayed the construction and development of the centre, but it was finally opened in 1972, and I'm told there have now been 5,000 or 10,000 church leaders and clergy from around the world who've spent time at the institute learning and engaging in dialogue.
And as I understand it, it is meant to be a place for sabbatical and study, which is what you're engaged in there, but it's open to Roman Catholic clergy, Anglican clergy, basically any denomination, Orthodox, and that's what it encourages.
There's a group of Baptists here at the moment. There's also Jewish scholars are often here doing research. And, people from all over the Christian and interfaith world.
What's the place like itself? Where are you physically in relation to Jerusalem?
It's an extraordinary location. It's actually on a hill overlooking Bethlehem. So Jerusalem and Bethlehem are really kind of twin cities joined by Hebron Road. And so from Tantura's roof, which we go out on quite a bit, let me tell you, we can see the glimpses of the outskirts of Jerusalem, and we can overlook Bethlehem. The checkpoint for the wall is just at the bottom of the hill. So it's quite an unusual location in that we're just outside Bethlehem, but it's quite tricky to get in and out of Bethlehem because of the checkpoint, and only a sort of 10-minute bus ride into Jerusalem.
Well, given that you're doing sort of a refresher course, it must be quite a marvellous thing to be in Jerusalem, the holy city, but you're seeing more than just splendour and wonder, I think, because you told me you've been in Ada Camp. Now, what was that experience like? Tell us what it was.
Yeah,
first.
Last weekend, we were... A group of us went over to Ada Camp actually to do a cooking class of all things, but really it's a kind of cultural immersion. And the camp was founded in 1948 when the nation state of Israel was declared, and a bunch of the Arab population was transferred into refugee camps. It was thought to be for only a short time, but tens of thousands of them are still there. And so inside Ada Camp, it's kind of...
It's a refugee camp. It's a refugee
camp.
Yeah,
it's a refugee camp, but it's not tents. It's actually, over time, people have built up buildings. It's a bit of a higgledy-piggledy kind of place with some limitations on sanitation and electricity, and the UN provides education and some welfare services in there.
Yeah.
4,000 people live in Ada Camp, predominantly Muslim, but about 5% are Christian as well. And the great bulk of them are young, so the majority are under 20. And unlike Bethlehem proper, Ada Camp, which is just on the edges of the town, is completely under the control of the Israeli military, which creates a whole lot of tension, and it's often a flashpoint for clashes between the young men in particular who throw stones at the wall and throw stones at some of the armoured vehicles and the Israeli military who really want to damp down any kind of dissent.
Well, just for the listener, the wall you're referring to is the wall that Israel built to separate off these Palestinian camps, and it literally is a wall that is impassable, and you can see it when you're in the camp.
It is a very big wall, yeah. I mean, it's about 10 or 12 metres high, made of concrete, and the refugee camp abuts the wall, and they used to be able to access a place called Ramat Rachel, Rachel's Tomb, which is a sacred site for Christians and Jews and Muslims, but the wall was built between the camp and
Rachel's
the holy
tomb.
Site. Yeah. And all along the wall on the Palestinian side, it's covered in quite clever graffiti and artwork, I should say street art. There's Banksy's and all kinds of things along there. So there's quite a lot of nonviolent resistance to the occupation. But sometimes that turns into more violent kind of resistance, particularly when there are tensions around violence in other parts of the country. Often people in Ada refugee camp will respond in solidarity with that. And of course, many of the listeners will have heard this week about the young man, really the child, 13-year-old boy, who was still in his school uniform, who was shot this week.
Yeah.
He was at a protest, and a sniper apparently was aiming for someone else and shot him by mistake, and so he was buried on Tuesday.
I noticed that Pope Benedict XVI visited this same refugee camp that you've just been in during his Middle East pilgrimage. What's the feeling like, though? You said before it's not a very tense place, but there's a 13-year-old boy dead. So when you say it's not a tense place, what do you mean? What's it like emotionally, psychologically, you know, from your observation?
Yeah, the people there are now second and third generation refugees and residents of the camp. And so they're quite used to, in fact, the great majority have grown up living under occupation. So they're quite used to the Australian military control. It seems to me that the tensions or the reactions to particular situations ebb and flow, depending on local factors and how unreasonable people feel a particular thing might be at any given time. The big issues are to do with access into Israel itself, so whether you can get through a checkpoint, but they also get kind of riled up if and when people hear about land being confiscated or about new settlements going up or about, as happened a couple of months ago, some Israeli settlers attacked the home of a family in a village just north of Ramallah. And so all of those events have knock-on effects throughout the Palestinian community. There's a strong connection, say, between Ada and Gaza. So whenever there's some significant event in Gaza, then there's usually reaction, not just at Ada, but at all the other refugee camps as well. And it's very difficult for the Israeli military to control because they're an army, and so they tend to respond like an army would when they sense that there's any kind of dissent or protest.
As contrast with a city council, for example.
Yeah, or even a police force would probably respond quite differently to non-violent protests.
Now, when you talk about this experience, what about your own ability to move around the country? Because I presume you probably are identifiably a priest, at least your papers are going to say that, even if you're not dressed as one. How easy have you found movement around in Israel?
As far as Israelis and Palestinians are concerned, I'm a tourist.
Right.
And they really want tourism here. I mean, it's the bedrock of the economy in Jerusalem and Bethlehem, and everyone benefits. So there's a lot of energy goes into ensuring that people travelling in this area feel safe and are treated with a high level of hospitality.
Hmm.
But what I notice as I move around is that there are, at the moment, lots of military and police patrols. And it doesn't affect me at all, actually. I'm completely free to move through any part of Israel or Palestine. But we are noticing that, young people, particularly, young Palestinians, are being stopped and being barred entry to the Old City, for example. For a time there, Palestinians under the age of 50 weren't allowed to go up to Al-Aqsa Mosque. And we've seen young Palestinian men in particular just being stopped on the street and questioned for some time just to... it's a kind of a crackdown on the part of the military police. So for tourists here, it really, in a sense, couldn't be safer because there's a lot riding on the success of the tourism industry. But it doesn't stop us also observing the difficulties that are faced by Palestinian people and also a lot of the Jews who want to distance themselves from the quite extreme behaviour of the settlers and who really do crave a just, peaceful solution and find themselves caught up between Israeli extremists on one hand and Arab extremists on the other.
Well, to do some of the light and shade of this, you mentioned that you were also at the book launch of a book called The General's Son by Miko Peled. Now, Miko is the son of a famous Israeli general, and they're working for a just peace for Palestinians. So this is part of the, I suppose, the light rather than the shade of the experience you're involved in. What was that launch like? What was the atmosphere like?
Yeah, there are a lot of people who I think were already quite aware of the kind of things that Mikko Peled was talking about. He's not a popular person in Israel, even though his father is a well-recognized and celebrated Israeli general. And just listening to the story of someone who grew up in an area where the original Arab population had been swept out in 1948 and a new Jewish population had been installed, and how he grew up not even knowing that the area that he grew up in had in fact been populated by other people before his family came to live in Israel. And then coming to understand the issues around both the 1948 war that gave rise to the State of Israel, and then in 1967 the Six-Day War, the fact that at that time his father, Mikko Peled's father, was advocating to put in place a two-state solution straight away and to work out a way to make that happen, but that was denied by the government of that era. And then to think that still in 2015 we're still talking about the possibility of a two-state solution and all of these issues are still revolving at the UN. It was quite fascinating to hear a Jewish person with such a pedigree, so steeped in the Zionist movement, and still supportive, in fact, of Israel as a nation, but nevertheless arguing that it's been too long, you know, that these issues still remain unresolved. And his view was that it's predominantly from the Israeli side that there's still no resolution of the conflict between Israel and Palestine and finding a two-state solution.
Well, Father Chris Bedding, we've run out of time, sadly, but it's been great to hear from you there. Father Chris Bedding, Anglican priest, rector of Darlington Parish in the Diocese of Perth, on sabbatical, but clearly not just lying around in banana chairs. Chris Bedding, thanks for being part of Sunday Nights again.
My pleasure.